I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
The information provided in this podcast episode is for entertainment purposes and is not medical advice. If you have any questions about your health, contact a medical professional. This content is strictly the opinions of Lucas Owen and is for informational and entertainment purposes only. The references, claims, and scientific information linked to any products are only applicable to those listeners who are based in the US. If you are outside the US, this information does not apply to you. It is not intended to provide medical advice or to take the place of medical advice or treatment from a personal physician. All viewers of this content are advised to consult with their doctors or qualified health professionals regarding specific health questions. Thank you for listening to the Boost Your Biology podcast. My name is Lucas Owen. I uncover the most cutting-edge health information on the planet, ranging from hormones, nutrition, supplementation, fat loss, biohacking, longevity, wellness, and a whole lot more. Welcome to the Boost Your Biology podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Boost Your Biology podcast. Today's special guest is a multi-time award-winning formulator in the nutraceutical industry, probably most famous as being the original formulator of Cellucor's C4 pre-workout. He's the current chief scientific officer at Glaxon. Joey Savage, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you for having me on. It's good to finally get to talk to you.
Yeah, man. I mean, we've been exchanging emails here and there, and I've kept an eye on your formulations over the years. But maybe do you want to start out with sharing with my audience, how did you get into formulating supplements?
I inherited it with some big shoes to fill. And my journey in this industry started, I was 16 years old working at a GNC. And, you know, back then was like the time of like bodybuilding and fitness magazines. So like, that's where the majority of like my product education was coming from. And, you know, it's something like where I just liked having that knowledge just in my back pocket. So like when I was selling it, different products to people in the stores, be like, oh, did you know it burns fat by blah, blah, blah percent? And then they'd be like, no way. And they'd be like, yeah. And then it's just pretty simple like that. Then one guy comes in and he's like, you know, if you stick with this long enough, you could end up, you know, making like six figures, you know, designing these things. And I was like, oh, no way. And that was all during high school. I graduate high school. I go off to college at Texas A&M. And I go interview at like a local independent supplement store there. The guy says, okay, I want you to promise if I hire you, you have to work here for at least one solid year before you go and take off to Cellucor. And I said, okay. Immediately following the interview, I drove straight to Cellucor because I looked at the back of the bottle and it was like 10 miles away. And it was not very far at all. So I go there. I interview with their like head sales guy. and his name was Jason Duran. He's kind of popular in the industry, but you know, he pretty much hired me on the spot because I start going off, you know, talking about the future of this whole space and like inhibiting myostatin and how fucking crazy that is. And so he hires me, and this was like on a Friday, and I get a call on Saturday morning. It's like, I'm pumping gas. I'm feeling like great. You know, I just got a job at Cellucor. And the CEO at the time, who is also the formulator, calls me. He's like, look, man, I don't know who you are, but I know that my sales guy gave you a job, and I've already called the store that you already interviewed at. And I'm just like, fuck. And he's like, I still want you to work there for a year. And I was like, dude, clearly this guy and the other guy have already talked, and like, I'm kind of caught here. But he goes, I'll tell you what, I will come in every Saturday, and this is Texas, and Saturday is football day, especially in a college town. And he literally would just come in every day, and we would just talk shop the entire time. Different ingredients, different mechanisms of action. He's like, hey, what do you think of this? Well, what about this? And if I'm combining these ingredients, you know, like really using like critical thinking, like what do you think will happen? And he didn't really have like any formal scientific training, which was interesting. Like he was like the majority, like self-taught. And I'm over there, like, you know, doing my school for genetics and biochemistry. And like, I'm, you know, really putting these pieces together in a way, and I'm helping things like make sense for him. And it was probably like two and a half years later where I'm like calling them up, because like I cultivated a relationship with those guys. Like they would, you know, like host like a fight night or something at a local bar, which was like MMA kind of stuff. And they would have a booth, and, or we would all go out to dinner. And I called up their CFO Doss, and I'm just like, I don't give a shit if I have to mop the fucking floors over there. I want you to hire me. So they brought me in, and I was assigned to do road sales, where basically you travel, you know, your entire area, going to each individual store. Those who do already have you in the store, you know, you're just like, you know, help and educate them. But like new stores, it's like, you know, getting the brand into the store. And I did that for about 2 months before the guy who was my mentor, like, just ended up in the hospital. It was a tragic scenario. And then, you know, the CFO kind of like took over in his kind of spot. And he's like, I need you to come in and start doing formulations right now. And I was 22. Jeez.
Oh my God.
And I said, 22. Okay. Yeah.
And were you still studying at the time, or?
Yeah, I was. I was going to school and working full time doing formulations and stuff at Cellucor. And I was a 22-year-old kid.
Man.
And it was between 2 and 3 years later after that where I remember like formulating C4 for the first time. And, you know, every product at the time was like alphanumeric. There was M5, P6, D4. And then he's like, why don't we just make a C4 and, you know, have it look all explosive and everything? I was like, okay. And he's like, the other thing is, I want you to make it better than Jack 3D. And I said, okay, bet. And looked at that formula, saw what they were doing, tweaked it in a couple of ways that just made it that much better. And it just was off to the races ever since that. So I was there from 2007 until 2013, which is a pretty solid span of 6 years. And then I ended up leaving just for a variety of different reasons. And then I ended up starting my own business where I was kind of like what you were talking about, going to do with your brand, doing like nootropics and different things like that. And ketones were one of the main things, the beta hydroxybutyrate. I got big into that. It was the first one to have a BHB RTD beverage, ready to drink beverage, which is kind of like a precursor to the hydration category before the hydration category really blew up. And we were doing that probably for about 3 to 4 years until we had like a manufacturing error where they contaminated like my whole batch of drinks, which was terrible. So we lost all the money in raw materials, packaging and everything. And they're like, because you provided all this stuff, we're just not going to pay for it. And I was like, I'm fucking done.
Jeez.
And through one of the investors of that company, he hooked me up with this guy, Michael, over in Houston. He actually wouldn't tell me his name, but eventually like we got on some emails. And I was like, you want to do some really cool, innovative shit? And he brought me in for an interview down at Glaxon/Zero Day. And part of my interview process was like with a very limited amount of things, like what can you do? And they were in between facilities. They're moving out of one facility. They're moving into this facility where I was having an interview. And I was talking about BHB and how I thought it was cool. And, you know, and how I really wanted to make it into a gel. That was one of the things that I thought would be like the coolest application of BHB. You don't want to be stuck drinking anything too much. And then, you know, doing the powder and scoop or the stick pack, you know, and water is just kind of boring. So I was like, what if you had a gel? And he goes, you think you can do that right now? And I'm just kind of like sitting there like, I don't know what you have in your warehouse. Are you sure? And he's like, yeah. And I go, well, what kind of equipment do you have? And he goes, I don't know. What do you need? I said, okay. And I go, do you have like a magnetic stirrer and, you know, hot water and everything? He said, I have a bowl, a whisk, and a coffee pot. And I said, okay. And I go, you have BHB? And he goes, yeah, I've got some of that. And I go, do you have flavoring? And he's like, yeah, I got some of that. So I got the flavoring. I got the BHB powder and the sweetener and everything. I put it all in this bowl. And I stopped myself and I'm like, do you have powdered gelatin? And he's like, no. And I said, do you have pectin? And he goes, no. And I said, okay. Do you have clear capsules? And he's like, yeah, I've got plenty of those. So I go in there and I grab this big handful of clear gelatin capsules, put them in with all the powders, take the near boiling hot, you know, coffee water with no coffee in it, pour that in there, and I'm whisking this whole thing up. And it, sure enough, it all the capsules melt, everything homogenizes. And I was like, do you have a mold or something? And he's like, I got a Tupperware from lunch. Oh. I was like, okay, wash that out and bring it over here. So he does that. And we do that, and sure enough, like an hour later, we had BHB in a I guess you would call it more of a gelatin or jello format. But that's pretty much what got me the job.
Man, oh man. Going back to the C4, I want to learn more about that, the initial formula. So you were assigned the role to like formulate that cellular core C4 product, and you were told to make it better than Jack 3D.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Was so popular back in the day.
Yes.
How did you approach that? What was your approach there?
Really, it didn't take much because like there's pump aspects, there's obviously the stimulant aspect, and then like kind of performance. And I wasn't even focusing so much on performance because at the time, 1,3-dimethylamylamine or DMAA was completely kosher to work with. So, you know, if you're going to center this formula around that, you have to know how DMAA works. And it's a trace amine, allegedly coming from geranium. But what it does is it creates like this type of dopaminergic, noradrenergic kind of response in the brain, which is very reward and goal-oriented behavior at the same time. So people just want to pursue to do whatever it is that gives them a sense of accomplishment. Because of that, I was like, okay, well then if norepinephrine and dopamine are the game that we're playing, how about some P5P? How about some L-DOPA and L-tyrosine, you know, to provide the precursors to that. So those could work out. But, you know, if we're going to be providing P5P, why don't we provide a little B12 too? And Jack 3D didn't have any kind of B vitamins to it. And one of the main staples to it was that we were going to be one of the first companies to really get behind creatine nitrate at the time. So we did get behind creatine nitrate in a very big way. And aside from that, it was, we used arginine AKG because between, you know, nitrates and then just like arginine at the time, like those were like the main pump ingredients that were available. No one knew back then that arginine had terrible absorption.
And now everyone's leaning towards citrulline as like the,
yeah. But there's, you know, you learn things all the time. Like, you know, yeah, you can have a ton of citrulline, but if you really do saturate the shit out of your body with citrulline, if suddenly arginine will start working again because it's able to occupy the arginase enzyme and therefore more arginine can get through. And you know, that alone can provide some pretty remarkable pumps that in my opinion are are very different from what you experience with a nitrate.
Mm. So then after, so then how did you arrive at Glaxon?
Arriving, so when Michael brought me in, like, he had this brand for a while and it just was not flashy. It had a lot of the same names that are on the current Glaxon products, like Alpha 365, Flight, Specimen. Like those were part of the standard Glaxon V1 kit. And I think where I came in was, I guess, what he would call probably the third version of Glaxon, because he'd gone through two label iterations. And then when I came in with, you know, him and TK and everything, we were like, we're going full gnarly color on the labels. We're going to go with this cartoon kind of vibe. We're not going to have any sponsored athletes, but instead we're going to have a mascot who just wears this cheap astronaut costume that we got off Amazon.com. And the idea was that, like, it was just going to be this running joke that the company with no sponsored athletes in this cheap ass astronaut costume from Amazon.com ends up being like one of the leading brands in sports nutrition.
Mm.
And it kind of panned out that way.
Mm. So at the beginning of, so if we look at the scope of products right now that Glaxon offers, were you responsible for like pioneering like pretty much all the formulas, or like contributing at least in some way to what they consist of and their ingredients?
Pretty well pioneering, like all of them. Sometimes it's like I'm an AI and Michael would generate the prompt. So he's like, I want a product that does X, Y, Z. And I'd be like, okay, well, we can do this and we can do this and we can do this and we can do this. And here's all the different reasons why that these will work together in a way that makes sense. You know, and of course I've had like a few different pet projects in there as well. Completely retooling Flight was one of the things I wanted to do at the very beginning. That's the stem cell, like growth peptides kind of thing, full of different organ extracts. Anomaly was something that was a pet project of mine, where we were the first sports nutrition company to use the AI derived peptides from Meritas. Fiber Fusion, which is probably the latest new drop that we've gotten from Glaxon, was also a pet project of mine because I just thought it was funny. And that we would suggest to stack it with our sleep aid, because in my opinion, the perfect night's sleep always ends with the perfect morning shit.
That's the that's the product with the toilet on the front.
It literally has a toilet on the front.
So good.
Yeah, it looks like a giant Kohler ad. That was the whole inspiration for that one.
Oh, I love it. I think it's a great marketing approach. So then you mentioned some of the other, because this definitely some very novel ingredients that you guys have definitely like at least pioneered or brought to the market. I mean, one of them in particular is PeptiStrong. Did you want to sort of elaborate on that particular ingredient? What caught your eye there?
You guys should be able to have that down in Australia, New Zealand. PeptiStrong is a fava bean. It is what they call a peptide network. And what they do is they use machine learning at Neurotas. They use machine learning to figure out where there are different peptides that come from like the hydrolysates of various food products. And what they do is they'll run them through a battery of simulations to find out, does it survive, you know, gastric transit, you know, the harsh pH of the stomach? Does it get into the bloodstream? They do all this before they really even like consider rodent studies. Then they kind of verify that with rodent studies, and then they'll end up taking it to human studies after that. The whole string of research on PeptiStrong, I took a major risk because there were no human studies published at the time when we brought the product out. But I could tell that there were a few things going on, that there was a decrease in specific muscle genes for atrophy. There was atrogen 1 and MURF1. And, you know, if you really dig deep, you'll realize that these are regulators of the ubiquitin proteasome pathway that pretty much its sole purpose is to eat up your muscle tissue and turn it into energy. The other thing is that it caused phosphorylation of the ribosomal subunit S6, which is like classic mTOR pathway. So if it was doing both, I knew it was going to be interesting. But since that time, like, we launched the product, there was a whole lot of negative feedback because most people were like naysaying. They're like, okay, fava beans, like, blow me. I don't believe that there's going to be anything like significant that comes out of this. And then they published the study. When it comes down to muscle breakdown, they had patients that would come in and put on like a full leg cast and immobilize their leg for like 6 weeks. And they had the control group where they had nothing. And then there was the experimental group who took PeptiStrong, and there was no atrophy in a 6 weeks period of time, which was like, okay, great on the no atrophy. What else do you have? They ran a further study with actual athletes and found out that it decreased post-myostatin by about 40%, or post-workout myostatin by about 40%, which is like, okay, that's also cool. That's interesting. But that reduction was like kind of transient. So really in that post-workout window, when like you want to have consumed all your amino acids or your post-workout proteins so it can get delivered to those tissues so it can go to work, it has a very opportune, you know, synchrony with that decrease in myostatin signaling. So you're able to repair and recover a lot more quickly because there's, you know, not this protein floating around that's a cock blocker for your muscle growth.
Yeah, with that's an important point to note, I guess, with being innovative in the supplement space. This is a conundrum that I'm facing at the moment with like wanting to pioneer new shit, like actually bring something new and novel to the market. But then I've got like the voices of like people who are like, but there's no human studies or there's no actual clinical trials in this ingredient. Like, how do you go about like arranging levels of evidence and like determining like what you perceive as like, yeah.
It takes a certain amount of intuition.
Yeah.
If you're going to roll the dice like that, you need, I mean, a rodent study is it's like a light in the dark. But if you have a clearly defined mechanism on like a cellular level and that rodent study kind of corroborates that story, then you've got a pretty good leg to stand on. Once you jump from the rodent to human stage, the main barriers you're going to run into are, you know, is the dose that was used in rodent cell studies translatable to human, even if you scale it up? Is that cost effective if you were to do that? And the third thing is bioavailability, which, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot. It depends on the properties of the compounds in, if it's in a botanical, you know, how high you can get that standardization. And if that ingredient needs any help becoming more bioavailable. And if that's the case, what can you do to make it more bioavailable?
Because actually another component there is, like the wild, wild west when it comes to different sourcing different botanicals. I'd imagine over the years working at Glaxon and formulating, you'd seen so many different batches of different herbal extracts, which, you know, how did you go about like vetting good quality sources and making sure that they're actually like you would have done third party analysis and things like that? What was that process like?
It's interesting when you're doing third party analysis for like botanicals and stuff. If you're lucky and you find something that's a decent purity where it's like 90% or above, you know, that you can test for that marker compound and, or depending on your labeling, you've also got to test for plant's identity. And if you have something like apigenin 98%, which I'm pretty sure you're a fan of, then it's really hard to find out if it's actually from celery, even though it's listed on the label that it comes from celery. Apigenin is found in celery seeds, sure. But when you have a 98% extract, there's that 2% material that's in there isn't always going to be enough to identify that as, say, celery. All of it has been through third-party testing. That's the funny part of this whole thing where, you know, you have a supplier who gives you a raw material with one method and, you know, we're testing it at a third-party facility in the United States where they're going to be testing it by another method. So I've got to be in touch with my QAQC guy and be like, look, you can't fail this material because it's not a fair comparison based on how they were trying to test it. And the manufacturer's C of A is guaranteeing that the material is based on how they have measured it. So a lot of times I've got to go back to like a raw material supplier and be like, I don't want to talk to you, sales guy. I want to talk to whoever's in the R&D lab over there because I have to get a method from them and send it to the third-party lab over here in the United States and get them to repeat each of the steps that you guys have done to create a positive ID on this. And, you know, I ran into that maybe five or I would say like every 5 out of 20 samples, you've got some weird stuff going on where you've really just got to get in there and like communicate and find out what's going on. Had citric acid, you know, test for like high moisture and had to find out that there was a different method that the vendor tested it on. You'll be shocked to find out that a majority of plants that grow in the sea don't have standards. And it really makes you question the validity of your raw materials because you're like, hey, wait a minute. You know, I'm just trying to get some Laminaria japonica here, you know, some regular Japanese brown seaweed. But, you know, there's labs in the United States who are like, we don't have any reference material. And when you're in a situation, you're like, okay, this is a commercially available product. The lab just doesn't know. So in that situation, you're like, fucking hire a guy with a boat. A botanist with a boat at that, and have him go out in the ocean and get a positive ID on this algae, scoop some up, and then they can take it back to the lab where they can get a thin layer chromatography fingerprint for it. You know, sometimes it's weird stuff like that where you have your raw material supplier like package up plant material and send it to your third party lab because it's a plant that they may have never seen before.
Yeah. What about the, at the moment, a pretty hot topic, which is getting quite a lot of coverage on different podcasts and things like that, is the GLP-1 agonists, that sort of pathway. Did you want to sort of elaborate on, you know, what you've seen, you know, a rise in this area, or perhaps even some orally active compounds that might be able to activate that pathway?
There's one that I know of for sure that has activity on GLP-1. Ingredia makes a product called Peptudia that is a series of different peptides that are found in, I believe, like milk or just regular casein protein. They're a French company. And they've got data on basically like incretin modulation. So it's GLP-1 and I think GIP as well. But those guys are the only ones that I know that have like legit data. A lot of companies are coming out right now saying protein works on GLP-1. Fiber works on GLP-1. Fat works on GLP-1. And technically, they all do, because whenever you eat something, suddenly you're not hungry. Well, shocker. Okay. So if you eat something, you're not hungry through GLP-1, you know, receptor activation. Okay. But the cool thing about like Ozempic and Wegovy and all this stuff is that they have a lot of side effects. And for as many people are on these drugs right now, it creates a lot of opportunities to create products that are adjacent to you know, that kind of treatment. So, you know, puffy faces, people having, you know, the rebound weight gain after they've lost a whole bunch of stuff. And the fact that people tend to lose a whole bunch of muscle tissue while they're on this. So like as much weight as they're dropping, a pretty significant amount of this weight that they're losing is muscle. So, you know, protein shakes make sense. Things like Pepti Strong would make sense, you know, if you're going to have less muscle wasting. There's a lot of applications that, you know, that the GLP-1 agonists, they're not addressing, but it creates opportunity for people like us and supplements where we can be like, hey, you can still take your Ozempic, but you might want to look out for X, Y, and Z, and here's products for that.
Yeah, I think one of the most commonly reported side effects is the nausea / like gastroparesis, where their stomach is just literally frozen.
Oh yeah, well I mean it's strange because like not necessarily, you know, the right tool for that would be fiber. That's something where you might need like magnesium oxide, or you might need like Cape aloe or senna or something to really push that stuff on through. I think it's kind of funny because even being backed up like that from being on GLP-1 agonists, like maybe that's another reason why you're not hungry. Maybe there's like an odd plumbing mechanism that's going on there.
Mechanical backup.
Like if you hit GLP-1 too much, then all of a sudden like your intestines just stop. You're like, something's fucked up here, guys. Everyone stop the line. Stop the line.
Yeah, definitely. I'm always keeping an eye out for different, you know, molecules and things like that when it comes to like hitting some of these typical pathways. But I guess another area that's like really seeing a lot of growth in is the peptide space, and there's, you know, new orally active peptides, the dileucine, it's recently released. What are some other compounds that you've been, like peptides in particular, that you've kept an eye out for?
I mean, because I'm an early adopter of Neurotos, they've got a whole suite of stuff that's coming down the pipeline. And I touched on that other one from Ingredia earlier. They have another one called Lactium, which is a decapeptide, which is something that co-binds the GABA receptor. You could take it with GABA or with whatever GABA agonist you happen to choose, because there's several. But we've got in our Tranquility Sleep formula where we have it in there with GABA and apigenin. So that's like this beautiful GABA festival as all these molecules join hands and dance around the receptor. but it's nice because it, you know, you, that one's really versatile. You could use it at certain dosages for like decreasing stress and cortisol, but at other dosages just to promote sleep and relaxation. We're going to find things, different peptides all over the place for all different kinds of reasons. And it's a shame that it took us this long to get here. Yeah. You know, I've got my eyes on so many of them. And there's quite a few that like have absorption issues. Like as soon as they're in the gut, you know, they're going to get broken down, not just by like some sort of like protease or something, but there might be an enzyme that is specifically for that peptide that just immediately fucks it over as soon as it's in the intestine or in the bloodstream. There's a lot of, what is the word I'm looking for? Histidyl peptides, if you will. Mm-hmm. Like carnosine is a good example. That's why people take beta alanine. It combines with histidine to form carnosine. And it's like a super antioxidant phosphagen doing five different jobs. And, yeah. You know, there's derivatives in that realm where there's potential. It's just that there is an enzyme called carnosinase that really just fucks up the whole thing. So it's another one of those arginine citrulline kind of like paradigms, where taking arginine, it's not going to be very good because arginase is going to go chew it all up. If you're to take citrulline, it's good enough to distract the arginase enzyme because it's, you know, similar in molecular shape a little bit, and it can bind to it. Then if you do that, it gets occupied. Then you can slide through some arginine. So, you know, all these histidyl peptides, for whatever benefit that they could potentially have, you're going to have to use carnosine in order to overcome that little bit of a hump in the road where it's just going to eat up whatever it comes into contact with.
Yeah, I'm definitely very excited about the new peptides that we discover and bring to market. And I'm definitely keeping my eye open for some of these molecules. But if we look at a different pathway, which is the like more of like a fat loss pathway, which is addressing cyclic AMP as the secondary messenger, the main molecule that's often touted for that is coleus forskolin, you know, which is a classical ingredient.
Oh yeah, our pathway.
Yeah, yeah. So I was wondering, I actually went on a hunt for molecules that would outperform like forskolin, because if you look up on PubMed, there's literally like 900 studies where they've referenced forskolin as like the active. They've tested it for so many different things, but I was curious to know if you'd found any other molecules that can potentially outperform forskolin to increase cyclic AMP.
So there's one alternative, and then there's one that can work with it. I would say sclerialide from clarisage. That is one that is very similar in the shape to forskolin. That I'd used that one in the past with some of the early Solucorp P6 formulas, where we were specifically targeting that pathway. But I mean, it really comes down to like the ability to source good sclerialide versus, you know, the glitz and glamour of like forskolin and forskolin from like Savinza, because they've got a 95% extract, you know, it's not very expensive. You know, that's like, you know, comparatively like sclerialide is your only other option. And then to combine this with like geraniol, which, you know, also has some like anti-catabolic play, but it also works within the same star pathway too.
It's I'm shocked. I'm shocked that you mentioned GG, geraniol, because I was actually, with my testosterone formulation that I'm working on now, I was actually considering that as an ingredient for my formula. But I think, yeah.
Dude, go down the rabbit hole, man. GG and this steroidogenic acute regulatory protein. You will be. You'll just tell them I sent you.
The actual ability for that ingredient to go into capsule format though, because isn't it a lipid, like a lipid molecule?
They have a 30% powder, so okay. It is doable. It's just it's kind of expensive doing that way because it's only 30% pure, and then it's all that stuff.
Interesting. No, that's really cool. What about some of the other ingredients that you've at least the achiote tree, A-C-H-I-O-T-E. Tim, one of your products, which one is it?
I want to say Bixa Alba. Wait, that's the same thing. Isn't that GG?
No. It's, maybe it is.
Yeah, bud.
Supplement facts.
Yeah, Anato, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's where GG Gold comes from, and it's where the Delta Tocotrienols comes from.
Yeah. Cool. What were you saying before? We were briefly having a chat with about the Eclonia Cava. You said that. What is that doing? Increasing your blood pressure?
It's just something I noticed after taking it. I fucked up because I was doing way too high of a dose. And it was one of your podcasts I saw, and I was like, all right, bet. I'm going to get my hands on some of this stuff. And I was probably doing like triple the dose. I was playing with fire. But it got to a point where it was like cumulative over time. And I was like, oh my God, I am kind of fucking losing my shit over here. And I just, it made me, they don't advertise this, but I feel like it had a significant impact on my caffeine tolerance because my blood pressure would go up. And I would just stop myself and be like, I can't have any more caffeine today. Like I would hit 300 milligrams of caffeine and be like, I'm done, no more. And very rarely since then will I touch anything past 300 milligrams of caffeine.
Yeah. I've always wondered how much actual iodine is found in the Eclonia Cava, like if it's actually meaningful or just like any other seaweed extract.
You know, I know what it is from kelp. Let me see this, Eclonia Cava. And what's really nice is, you know, since we're here on this chat, I can look up all this stuff while we're on the fly. I'm going to show you and I guess all the people at home something. Have you ever heard of Dr. Duke's phyto and ethnobotanical database?
Definitely not, but I'm going to have to bookmark that immediately.
Oh my God, you're going to have to. All right, so the USDA, which is like, I don't know, that governing body of agriculture in the United States, and this guy, James Duke, made this database, which basically scraped all the data from every major study showing the components that are in a majority of like known edible medicinal plants, et cetera. And it would show you the recorded concentrations with references to the study where those concentrations, I'll put it in the chat. We have a chat.
Yeah, I've got it open in front of me now. So it's the phytochem.nal.usada.gov. Yes. Yeah. Wow. That is a super cool database.
Now, I don't know if Eclonia Cava is in there because at the time that this was made, I think this whole database was like concluded sometime in the 90s. But it's a very valuable, like if you wanted to know, for example, how much iodine is in kelp, you can put in Ascophyllum nodosum or just kelp and it will tell you what the recorded values of iodine and kelp are.
Yeah, well, I'm doing a search of like forskolin and it's coming up with some other derivatives like acetyl forskolin, D-acetyl forskolin.
See, you didn't even know. You didn't even know those were options.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, where can we get some acetyl forskolin, Sabinsa? Yeah. Where's that?
I'm determined to find a better coleus forskolin out there. I mean, you've mentioned one that's I've never heard of, the Clarice Sage. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I've been doing this since I was 22. Can you tell?
Nah, it's awesome. What about in terms of like in the supplement space game? I mean, when it came to like educating, going around to different, you know, GNC stores and things like that, educating, you know, the staff on deck, like how do you think the whole supplement space has evolved in maybe like the last 5 to 10 years? Like how do you think, you know, we've really seen it change dramatically?
I think suddenly people give a shit more than they ever have before. Especially during like COVID and all that. All of a sudden, everybody wanted to become like virologists or epidemiologists and stuff, and like understanding like these tiny cellular mechanisms, which I think was like a great wake-up call for society. Mm. But I mean, I would say freaks like me and you, we've been into this kind of stuff for a while. Like we know about the tiny invisible world inside of us. But I think more people are coming into touch with that. And like, you know, if 15 years ago, you'd be like, hey, did you know that there's bacteria that live inside of you that, you know, like secrete and do all this stuff and eat all your poop and everything. And, you know, they're like symbiotes and, you know, there's nothing you could do about it. They're literally crawling all over you as we speak. People would be like, what? I take a shower. That's probably going to be like your number one answer that people will give you. But it's like, no, you are a host of an entire environment that like exists that you just cannot even see. Mm. And I think that's important for people to understand this kind of stuff. Like, I mean, you've probably seen like one or two of my videos online where it's just like, I'm spitting the whole cellular mechanism at these people. And like, I have no regard for anyone's comprehension. Like I'm doing it just to get it out there. So people take notes and then maybe they go Google that shit later. And they're like, holy fuck, this is real. You know, and I do it in that way. Like not just as a flex, but like I'm seriously throwing out some breadcrumbs there for people to pick up and like, you know, improve their own comprehension. Like, that's kind of the tool. And is it a flex? Yeah, but it's also just a really weird freak show because who else is getting on YouTube just like saying all this stuff, talking about like a multi-component formula and how each of these different things are working together. And it's, it's also not easy.
Yeah, no, I really respect the fact that like after the virus and things like that, people are more conscious about like the dosages of their vitamins, like vitamin D, vitamin B6, you know, how much zinc they should be taking. It's actually been a really good thing for us because now everyone like they can respect good formulas and like well thought out formulations. I mean, you see different products on the market that have just been terribly like underdosed proprietary blends. Like you'd see it all the time.
I don't necessarily hate that. I think that there's a natural progression that like our consumers go through. Like, you know, they can start at vitamin C gummies and then maybe like add some zinc into their stack. And then they find out if they're taking vitamin D or vitamin C and zinc that they might need some copper in order to balance out the zinc, where, you know, they'll just start taking it in bites and chunks. And eventually they'll come across a product that, oh my God, has vitamin C, zinc, and copper in it. And it's like, oh, why don't I just take this one instead of these three different things? People like in our society, you know, they're aware of this and they'll slowly graduate to better and better things. But like, there's always going to be products in the marketplace that are complete fucking garbage, that are just snake oil, that, you know, are there for, you know, the fad, for TikTok, for Instagram, for whatever, you know, flavor of the week kind of ingredient, or like Dr. Oz character, or in this case, more recently, I guess, Andrew Huberman. And it bugs me because like, I was a fan of Huberman for a while. And I see like all these people are like, he sucks now. He's just shilling all these different vitamins. And it's like, he has become the new Dr. Oz.
Mm. Was there anything in particular, like any particular herb, was he talking about like Fidoja or Tonkat Ali that you're just like, no, I don't really agree with?
Fidoja, for the fact that there's mostly only rodent studies and that there is some negative side effects with Fidoja if taken for a long period of time on testicular health. That's one of them. Does it increase testosterone? Yes. But, you know, it's something to be watched at in the long term. The fact that he supports AG1, which I think is like one of the biggest highway robbery fucking products ever. Yeah, it's not worth $100.
I'm doing a whole YouTube video like just debunking Athletic Greens. Like this is a really bad formula.
Not if it's $20. If it's $20, I don't feel so bad about it. But they're charging people a whole ton of money for that product, and you know, it's probably worth about $20.
Hmm. What about the, I mean, you mentioned the space before around the microbiome. I mean, a particular area that I'm really fascinated by is like the psychobiotic space, like different psychobiotics. Yeah.
When it comes to the microbiome of me, if it's for gut health or immunity, I don't really give a shit because that's what they all do.
Yeah.
I'm interested in all the things outside of that. So when you say, you know, a psychobiotic, like, oh, you mean like in my gut, this thing may have an impact on, you know, how much serotonin or GABA that I might make because, you know, it's either spitting out metabolites of its own metabolism that could be like precursors to any of these things, or they might have enzymes that facilitate the conversion of them. Okay, I'm interested. And the gut-brain axis is a real thing. Same with the gut-skin axis. I am more interested in a gut-skin microbe than I am in like a regular gut health or immunity microbe because it's something extra. And there's a flood of different muscle growth and weight loss microbes that I am pretty confident are about to drop in big ways in like the next 2 to 3 years. There's so many different features, Like the weight loss ones are available in both probiotic and postbiotic. Sometimes the dead ones actually are more effective than the live ones. How that makes sense, I'm not exactly sure. I didn't even know the word lipotachic acid before I started looking into this kind of stuff. But it's just like these fragments, the shrapnel of the microbe that used to be alive that just causes this signaling event to go on inside your body where all of a sudden, you know, on a blown up scale, you know, you have people that were in these clinical studies that had significant decreases in like their hip circumference. So like legitimately losing belly fat over like a 4 to 6 week period by taking a bacteria that's dead.
Hmm.
And for me, it makes me think like, are we even sentient? Like, or are these like colonies of bacteria that live on us and around us, like the ones that are really in control, you know, because they're creating a much greater orchestra of different like signaling molecules and stuff, or even building biofilms or doing whatever the fuck that they want. And more or less, we just have to deal with it. You know, go get more food, flesh bot. You know, it's one of those kinds of things where, you know, if you understand the microbiome enough, you begin to start questioning like, oh man, like what is this existence? It's like us living on the earth. And it's like, well, you know, is it us manipulating the climate, or is the earth manipulating the climate, or is the sun, like what's going on?
Yeah, definitely within that space. I mean, the one like bacteria that's probably, I'd probably say it's probably like the most well studied when it comes to like improving body composition is Akkermansia. Have you seen any other
have Akkermansia?
Yeah, because I've seen like, you know, you see like metformin has been shown to increase the abundance and growth of Akkermansia, probably berberine, probably other flavonoids. Like they're probably, a lot of them promote the growth of that bacteria. But I was also looking into like specific strains that can increase, again, like activate GLP-1, you know, reduce HbA1c, help with glucose shuttling. Like
I feel that like a lot of those are, there's more of a handful of those with HbA1c and like glucose tolerance regulation that are out there. A lot of times when I'm shopping microbes and stuff, I just want someone who's going to crank out a lot of short chain fatty acids.
Yeah.
Like one that, you know, I came across more recently is Clostridium butyricum. And okay, you're going to crank out more butyric acid. That could be a lot of different things. Like it could create more BHB and therefore more ATP and stuff for my cells, which is really kind of nice. Anything that's going to pump out, you know, acetate, propionate, butyrate, like any of the short chain fats, not only is it going to lube me up so I can poop easy, but it's giving me, you know, little tiny energy substrates.
Yeah, I'm definitely finding that space very interesting. I mean, like before, for example, like how do we know that there isn't a specific gut bacteria that can, I mean, there's a little bit of study on Lactobacillus reuteri for the, like the testosterone, increasing vitamin D, vitamin B12. Yep. How do we know there aren't any other strains out there that specifically activate that HPG axis or work on androgen receptors, you know?
There probably are. And it, you know, I would think that a good amount of it has to deal with, you know, kind of like you were talking about earlier with working on like the cyclic AMP signaling cascade, the star protein, and how the metabolism of cholesterol goes down. Because ultimately that's what's going to have your impact on testosterone, cortisol, fucking everything. You know, what microbes can we incorporate to where we have, I don't know, you don't want to necessarily have less, but just more directed cholesterol metabolism. Or, you know, very similarly, how do those microbes react with different bile salts and bile acids that come out from the gallbladder?
Actually, that brings up, you know, I would see on my YouTube channel right now, if you have a look at the analytics, the most searched video and the getting like thousands of views every single day is Tutka. So did you want to maybe talk about, I mean, the future, I've looked into, is it the FXR farzinoid?
You know, the steroid hormones are really interesting because they do all have these interestingly similar shapes. And because of that, they are able to access a certain group of, you know, DNA bound nuclear receptors that control all kinds of different genes. The farcinoid X receptor is like one of those. But it's also, you know, very similar to like what we would say are the PPAR receptors, PPAR alpha, gamma, delta, and how carotenoids, which are like a steroid molecule without those middle rings, can bind to those. But you can also get something like bitter melon extract and like have something like memortisin, which has the same steroid backbone, but it can go in there and modulate these different PPARs. It's just one of those fields where there's going to be like a lot more to be figured out there, where it can control fat and carbohydrate metabolism. You know, a lot of that stuff can be downstream from AMPK or it could be upstream from AMPK. But I think when it comes to the bile salts and bile acids, I think there's some interplay between that and GLP-1. And I think there's some interplay between that and the absorption of fat soluble nutrients. And I haven't figured it all out yet, but it's one of those like hobby things that are going on in the background of my mind of like, okay, how are these things playing together? And, you know, at some point these are all going to come together in one place and be like, aha, now we've got like the full plan of like the next generation fat burner.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. I'm excited for that with Tutka. I mean, I've personally, you know, use it myself and like I've seen improvements in digestion and even transient liver enzyme reductions. Like it works quite well for that. The other one's like Utka. Like, have you seen much research on the original? Like UDC? Like
ursodeoxycholic acid?
Yeah.
So there's quite a few. There's ursodeoxycholic acid, tauroursodeoxycholic acid. There's quinodeoxycholic acid. And these are all just things that the bile makes, whether it's in bears or bulls or human beings. And it has to do with how well things get emulsified. Because when you eat like fat soluble nutrients, those bile salts and everything, they come out. There's got to be like some sort of dietary fats, phospholipids, something in the matter that you eat where those things will come together and form chylomicrons where you have lymphatic absorption. And I kind of plug this into a few of my capsule products because I coined it the poor man's liposome, where you just use phospholipids and we use ox bile powder instead of, you know, making a full blown liposome. It's something I always wanted, but just never had access to. And I was like, fine, I'll do it this way because these are the ingredients that more or less make a liposome already naturally inside the intestine. And that's, it does two things. It boosts bioavailability, but I'm able to hitch a ride on the body's second circulatory system. So if it goes to the lymph and not the blood, I'm not going to be as subject to any kind of like liver detoxification steps in that process of bioavailability.
Mm. Yeah. Fascinating. From like a liver health standpoint, I mean, there's a range of different products that are out there on the market. Do you have a liver detox formula that you've developed or explored?
The plan was originally to use Tudka, but it's not quite compliant here in the United States. So we went with ox bile, we used NAC, we used glutathione both.
When you say not compliant, like what do you mean by that in the US?
In the United States, if you were to use an ingredient, it has to meet a little bit of criteria. It has to be naturally occurring in the food supply. So what types of bios are you eating? Now, there's a lot that can be interpreted here. And let's say ox bile, for example. I'll go with that because it's close enough to home. There is a very long history of different cultures eating organs and not dying, right? But we didn't know necessarily every single chemical component that was just, say, I don't know, in the bile of a cow. But what you can do is nowadays you can take that, you can split all the different molecules apart, you can find all these different types of folic acids that are in ox bile or in a gallbladder of a cow. And then suddenly you create them at remarkable purity and put them on the market. The FDA doesn't necessarily like that, because what they want to see is if you're going to isolate an individual compound like that, you have to file a new dietary ingredient notification 75 days before it goes to market, or you take an even longer process, which is arguably lazier on the government and the person who's filing its part, where you get a self-affirmed, generally recognized as safe notification, which can take like 6 to 9 months. You know, one takes less time. However, there's higher scrutiny. You have to provide toxicity and safety studies both in like your rodent model systems and in humans. And you really need to be really well buttoned up as far as like not having any kind of side effects, because if they see any kind of weakness or observed adverse event level, they're going to just completely deny it. Then you've got to start over on the entire application process. So I don't think anyone's filed the NDI for TUDCA. Ox bile is fine, even though it may contain TUDCA, but TUDCA on its own as a synthetic is a no-no.
So surely,
to be clear.
Yeah, it's completely, with companies that are selling it right now, like there've been companies that have selling TUDCA in isolated capsule form well over 12 months, surely they've got grass status by now.
Oh, that's not necessarily the case, because products over here don't necessarily have to get pre-market approval. I mean, there's plenty of bad actors out there who, put SARMs and steroids and stuff and pills. They either declare it or don't declare it, or they'll not put a supplement facts panel on it. They'll say it's a research chemical or something. Someone recently did this with BPC-157, for example. And the Food and Drug Administration over here said, okay, basically all peptides, TB-500, BPC-157, all these different things must be prescribed by a doctor. And they can't just be on the open market anymore. I mean, they may still be down under. I mean, might be totally.
Was that, I think I saw that. Was it Human Lab, Muscle Lab? What was the company? They said it's Man for sports. Which one?
Man Sports.
Man Sports. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I did see that.
That one caught a lot of fire really quickly. And it's just like, oh God, this is not good. Yeah, no pre-market notification, no prescription, no nothing. They're just going to put it on there. And there's no supplement facts panel. Like, they thought about this for a minute because they knew that once this thing was out that they were going to get in trouble. Mm. So they did a couple different loophole kind of things so, it wouldn't be looked at as a supplement, that it's a research chemical. But research chemicals that are sold for research are usually in a powder form. Rats don't take capsules, at least not that big.
Yeah, no, that's it's pretty interesting with that whole space. I mean, like you said before we even started the podcast, is like the ideal scenario, and I'd imagine like when you go to start a new project, and I'd imagine you've probably got like 50 to 100 different formulas just sitting on your spreadsheets, just like, eventually one day they might make it to market, they may not. But when it comes to that process, like you have the dream scenario, which is like you can include whatever ingredient at whatever dose that you want and it's financially viable and all that. But then when it comes to like actually like determining feasibility, you have to compromise, particularly as a formulator.
It sucks. And there's a lot of coming down to earth when you have something that makes a lot of sense and you want it to be the best product possible for your customers and everything. Because ultimately, like what you want to do is you want to help people, and technologically, you want to do something that moves our industry forward. It moves health forward. It moves everything forward. But, people don't want to pay $200 a bottle for something for only 30 days. Like, it just doesn't make sense at that point. Even if, you know, you could put 20 years of their lifespan on, they're like, okay, well, maybe not. Maybe when I'm like really close to the end of my life, I'll buy this thing at $200 a month to try to get 20 extra years out.
Brian Johnson will buy it. He'll definitely buy it.
Brian Johnson will fucking buy anything that tells him it's going to be.
Oh, geez. I wonder how much he spends a month on his supplements.
I would ensure that he buys a lot of digestive enzymes for his diet.
Is he a vegetarian?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's plants only. It's plants only and no sunlight. Which I get it. I get it. Yeah, sunlight causes aging. But Jesus fucking Christ, man. He's gonna win the most transparent skin award from somebody at some point. We're gonna create our own little different division of biohacking awards, and he's gonna be up there winning that. And then next to fucking Scott Kelly from NASA, who was the one guy exposed to the most radiation in their entire lifetime.
So funny.
The Radiation Lifetime Achievement Award.
That's so funny. Jeez. So
Johnson won't stand close to him because he's afraid of getting more radiation.
He'll wear an EMF protecting outfit, some sort of EMF shield. What do you because you've been involved in so many different like side hustles and different projects and things like that. I mean, what are you spending most of your time on nowadays? Like you sort of mentioned at the start, you know, vectoring towards Savage Nutra. So do you want to sort of elaborate on that?
So what it is I have a consulting firm and I work with up and coming brands. I work with existing brands. If they want to do like formulation tweaks, flavoring tweaks, potential like kind of like rebrand and marketing, I do that. I also work with raw material companies for raw materials that I really, really like and, you know, are things that I would want to showcase and really get out there a lot more. You know, I definitely stand behind all those people. Some are peptides, some are BHP, some are all these different things, some are even microbes. But the idea is, you know, these things are the future. And, you know, a lot of people aren't too hip to this stuff right now. But the more we end up getting out there and talking about it, the more it just gets publicized and it can permeate into the consciousness. So those brands, that was ingredient companies and manufacturers. So obviously with the first two steps, you know, cool ingredients, cool up and coming brands, they need a place to work together and make their product. So I work with manufacturers too. Like we were saying at the beginning of before the podcast even started, in the past 5 weeks, I will have gone to 4 different expos. Talking to people and like ingredients, manufacturing brands and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. So you definitely well and truly across the industry as a whole. And I'm like, I'd imagine there might be people listening to the podcast. So, you know, want to hit you up and message you. They might have their own company that they own and they want to scale it or optimize their formulations. But, if they wanted to connect with you, Joey, like where can they find you?
You can find me at savagenutra.com. My personal email is joey@savagenutra.com. You can find me on Instagram at savagenutra. You can find me on YouTube at Supplement Lab, which we're also going to end up having to create a YouTube channel for that, but I just haven't gotten around to it yet. And you can find me on the SupWorks podcast, which is on Apple, Spotify, and on YouTube.
Awesome. Make sure to leave those linked in the show notes. But Joey, we are definitely going to have to do a round two because we have only just skimmed the surface on like a wide range of different areas and topics. But I would love to get you back on the podcast. I'll get some feedback from some of the guys who are in my group coaching call. They'll listen to this and give some and feedback and request some topics. So yeah, Joey, thanks again for coming on the podcast. It was fun chatting.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And we should do this again probably at the end of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.